All right, go right ahead. Go right ahead and hit record, baby. If you hear any chewing, I'm eating dinner. Oh, baby. All right, we're on.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome to the pod.
Welcome to the pod. Coming at you a little later than usual in recording land. It may be any time where you are listening to this.
Yeah, it could be the future.
It almost certainly is the future.
President Jimmy Carter Jr.
President James Carter Jr.
has just announced.
And Lil Wayne has dropped the Carter 45. Which are all songs about Donald Trump.
It's actually not easy to eat shawarma and podcast at the same time. I don't know. I might have to take it easy on the shawarma for a minute.
Shawarma's an intense one for sure. Yeah. Shawarma.
I just want to scarf it down.
Yeah, no. And shawarma commands that you do as it says. It's what that kind of food, like when it grips you. I love shawarma.
No, me too. Like half of the good part of living in cities is access to shawarma.
Yeah. Access to shawarma, pho, ramen, pizza, tacos.
Food. It's really just all about food. My whole love of cities. Like a little food. Bit of drinking, but mostly food.
Food and prostitutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Urbanism.
Urbanism. This week, I had some things in the chamber here that I wanted to bring up while we were recording.
Hell yeah, brother.
So let me pull them up here. I sent them to you on Instagram. These were a long time ago. From the folks at Rise Indigenous, their Instagram page, they posted what appears to be a screenshot of a news article. So no telling how real this image or this page is. I have no idea, but I thought this would be a fun prompt. It says air pollution from AI could surpass that of all the cars in California. Do you think that's possible? Or is this like pro-car propaganda, like actually, like deep down, like, oh, don't worry about your cars. It's actually AI that's ruining the world. You know what I mean?
I don't really know the numbers on it very well. There's a few people sounding the alarm who appear to be pretty competent.
Mm-hmm.
You say it's going to be a major contributor to climate change.
Yeah.
But I don't know the numbers on it. I don't train large language models. I don't know how they work.
You just date them.
Yeah. I trained linear regression in Python yesterday for the first time.
Nice.
And I said to myself, I'm a data scientist now.
You can do linear line.
It's pretty easy, all things considered.
Nice. But yeah, I read somewhere else that... you know, to do like one simple AI or ChatGPT request, you could charge like 6 iPhones with the amount of energy that it requires.
That's insane.
So like if that's true, I guess I could imagine that people's stupid ass questions are outweighing their stupid ass commutes as an impact on climate change. But I'm still skeptical.
This is just a brief interruption. Doing the numbers on the back of a napkin here, it looks like charging an iPhone is about one order of magnitude more energy than calling a single ChatGPT query, which is bad. I mean, that means you could just make 10 and then you've used a whole day of iPhone energy to query. That is pretty expensive compared to querying like a relational database or using just like a normal website, so to speak. But it's got nothing on your fucking lights, your heater, your washer, your dryer, your AC, your car, eating meat. That's where you want to focus your attention.
Are you in shawarma land?
Bro, I'm taking the shawarma to the cleaners.
There you go.
I'm giving the shawarma the business.
We'll edit in some, like,
I'm making love to the shawarma right now.
Yeah, we'll edit in some 80s R&B.
Oh, goodness gracious, it's good to be alive.
What are you macking? You macking what? Are you doing chicken shawarma? What you got today?
Yeah, so I did chicken, rice, salad. No white sauce, only hot sauce. But then I got hummus. A hummus to offset the absence of the white sauce.
Okay.
It comes with a pita.
So no white sauce. You get baba ganoush?
I do not get baba ganoush.
Ooh, I always get baba ganoush.
Sometimes, what's the dessert called? The little flaky guy? Baklava? Sometimes I opt for the baklava. But I like
baklava.
Not today.
I'm a baba ganoush fiend.
My guy does thigh as like chicken, and then breast as chicken shawarma, and I just get the chicken thigh because I think it's better.
Nice.
It's also like prepared. It's also prepped, so you can order it and it's ready in like a couple minutes.
Mm. That sounds great. Our shawarma spot is like all the way across town, which is tough. We do have in our neighborhood the Falafel King.
Sounds legit. The best guy is always something like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that one in the U District in Seattle, Shawarma King. Ooh. That's probably the best one I've ever had.
There's that guy in Queens. He's like, oh, I'm the Falafel King of New York. Mm-hmm. His falafel's pretty good. They're just extra big. They're just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, you expect that of the king, right?
Nice guy.
Nice fella. Friend of the pod.
Yeah, he can come on the podcast. I did invite Hot Dog Henry. There's this guy at work. He's just a real piece of work. He's a real character.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly rides the bus. And I'd love Hot Dog Henry to be our first guest.
That sounds good. Got to start somewhere.
He's a piece of Austin. He's a piece of our urban fabric.
He is the dampest part of the urban fabric, probably. With hot dog water.
Like, bro, I want a nickname like that.
I mean, I'm excited to learn more. Can you give us a sneak peek, or do you want Hot Dog Henry to tell his own story?
I don't know a damn thing about him.
Why is he called Hot Dog Henry, then?
Because he's a character. I don't know how... That's just how he introduces himself.
Clutch. Sick.
He likes to play backgammon.
I like backgammon. I play a lot of backgammon with my friend Daniel. Daniel's quite good at backgammon. I've never beat him, which is crazy because it's a dice rolling game. But I feel like backgammon has a touch bit of strategy.
I don't know anything else about him. Right now he's working security at like a bar in the area,
mm-hmm.
and he's taken two buses to get uptown to see us at the restaurant.
Dang.
He used to come in all the time because he used to live across the street.
Yep. That's how you know a spot is really like a spot for you is if you will take two buses across town to return to it.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, some of my favorite spots are farther away than they used to be. It's usually just one bus, though.
I haven't been to Round Rock since I graduated high school.
You haven't ridden the night train to Round Rock?
You do have to drive to get to where I'm from.
I mean, that's not technically true.
I think it's possible. Like, you could technically bike there, and you can... I think there is some bus service.
I bet you could take a bus from the terminal train station of the Red Line into Round Rock. That has to exist, right?
The problem is, there is a flyer bus to downtown Round Rock, but it only has... It's like three buses... towards Austin in the morning and then three out of the
city.
That's
all? Holy.
Right, so
goodness.
I wouldn't be able to take the bus to Round Rock in the morning anyway. And then I think the service in Round Rock, which may or may not exist anymore because this is new anyway. Mm-hmm. It was just like a couple neighborhood circulators that get you to the downtown transfer point.
Right.
They take you to downtown Round Rock, and then from there you can commute to the city three times in the morning.
Huh. Wow, that's so few. Considering the relative gravity, what is the actual mathematic descriptor? You know, city nerd uses it when he's doing the calculations of two cities based on their distance and their relative populations, creates like a density score or a gravity score. I can't remember, but you understand, listener. I mean, Austin to Round Rock must have a huge score compared to like Denver to Boulder. Because Boulder only has, I mean, Boulder has less than 100,000 people. Easy. I think it's closer to 50. There's got to be 400,000 people in Round Rock, right?
No.
Yeah.
200 or 300? 200 or 300.
All right. Round Rock.
130, baby.
130, that's it. But that's still so many more. What is Boulder?
No, Boulder's big, big time.
Boulder's not big. There's only, oh wow, there's 105,000 people in Boulder. That's crazy. I wonder if that's the whole county. No, Home Rule City has a population of 108,000. Wow.
Metro.
But the reason I bring up Denver to Boulder is because the Flatiron Flyer really works, and it runs at 15-minute headways, like, for 10 hours a day every day. It is 30 minute headways on the weekends,
and Denver spends like twice as much money on transit.
So there you go. I mean, that's definitely one of my favorite public transit routes. If you're traveling to Denver, I know I talk a lot of shit about it, but there's some great places you can get on public transit. I would recommend taking any bus downtown, or if you're staying downtown, just walk to Union Station, and then you can pick up the Flatiron Flyer to Boulder. You can get off either at basically the university at CU, and walk, take a beautiful walk through just a gorgeous neighborhood to Chautauqua Park, do an easy hike. It's absolutely lovely, and it's super easy to get there to and from. The only thing I would say is if you're coming back to Denver, be sure to check to see if there's any huge events going on in Denver that might fill the Boulder to Denver route up at like 5 or 6 p.m. Because I've definitely been caught on a bus that was absolutely stuffed full of people. And it's a motor coach, so people are just like standing in the aisle. It's pretty uncomfortable.
If you ever go downtown, you will be taken. There are evil criminals lurking in the alleys, waiting for innocent people to take advantage of. Bro, I've been waiting my whole life to start my independent media network.
Yes, I've immediately
become Alex Jones.
I mean, there's a path of least resistance, you know, be like water.
No, you guys are all going to be buying my penis pills. I'm going to be so powerful.
We're going to sell so many supplements. Oh, man.
The government is going to get you.
Your Alex Jones is honestly pretty decent.
He's been around. He's yelled at me from his tank. He is like a Hummer.
Like when you were trying to like drop his food off to him or something curbside?
No, like whenever there were like those like protests and stuff. You know, I was there.
Yep.
And so was he. He's always there. He's everywhere. Yeah. He's it's excellent how out on the town he is. And it's a shame that he's had to go keep somewhat of a lower profile in recent years. I haven't seen him in public in like 5 years.
It's a shame? Isn't it like actually feel good? Are you free speech? You're free. You're going to say free speech.
He's an Austin original. I'll leave it at that.
Is he from Austin? Because I know he's lived there a long time. I don't know where
he's from. He's an Austin story.
That's true. His fame has all taken place while he's been doing a show out of Austin. He was born in Dallas.
Just like all good Austinites.
Boom. Jones began his career in Austin working on a live call-in format public access cable TV program. In 96, he switched to radio, hosting a show called The Final Edition on KJFK. He was on KJFK, of course he was. When are we going to get picked up by KJFK?
Dude, we can get on any... we can get on the radio. This is that. That's what we're doing. That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in the future, baby.
We are. Until they... I mean, the government's definitely going to limit our ability to just, like, publicly publish content like this, right? Like, this is the end of a golden age of this odd, like, new medium,
I don't think,
right?
So. I mean, I think they can surveil us, but it's a lot harder to suppress us, just given the open internet that we have.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait until I start getting my, like, daily allotment of, you know, meme-based coin so that I can go purchase my groceries.
You think meme coins?
Yeah, right?
The government doesn't know how Bitcoin works.
That's true. I'm mostly just being cheeky. I feel very cheeky today.
I'm tired. I've been sick this week again.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Not ideal.
Did you get the, like, norovirus thing, or?
No, I don't know. I had a cough this week.
Had a cough, yeah.
Yeah. But I did just go on a bike ride, so kind of getting back into the normal swing of things.
Nice. I've been working a lot. It's been really cold, so some days have been a little shorter actually out in the field, prospecting new business. Been doing more on the phones, but it was a productive week. I'm going to Grand Junction on Wednesday to try to find some new customers out there. And that should be nice. It'll be a touch warmer there. But yeah, I don't really have a ton else prepared today.
I have some good shit.
Yeah. Let's get after it.
No, so we I have Roadway Dot Report, right? That's one of my projects. If you go to that website, if you go to Roadway Dot Report, type it into your phone or your laptop, it'll pull up a map of every traffic death in America.
Don't do it, listener. It's a trap. Don't do it.
It's sad. You zoom out and you're like, oh, there's a lot of traffic deaths, and then you zoom in to, like, your street and you're like, oh man, that's still a lot of traffic deaths.
Oh, wow. I'm surrounded by death everywhere I go.
It's a great website. Great website. If you go to roadway.report/Texas, it's a slightly more detailed look at pedestrian collisions in just Texas. And it's just dating back about 10 years. But it has fatal and non-fatal pedestrian and bicycle incidents mapped for Texas. So I was trying to test some assumptions I had about traffic violence against this Texas data set. I was just trying to perform, like, a linear regression on basically between certain variables. It was, what were they? I was trying to predict the incidence of serious pedestrian injuries per capita in a given census tract, based on the certain demographic characteristics of that census tract. Mm-hmm. And the characteristic that I found with the highest predictive power was the percentage of households that were low income. I only tried, like, a handful of things, right? I was just throwing some stuff at the wall. But that was more predictive than population density, than, percentage of people in a census tract who drive. It had more predictive power than the percentage of the tract that was non-white. Income mattered more to a pretty significant margin.
Interesting. And these were the data collected for the census tract in which the accident occurred.
Yes.
Is there any way to understand, like, who is getting injured? Like, who the pedestrians are? as opposed to like the demographics of the area of the accident, because, you know, like how many people, like, could you tell me how many people from Kansas were hit by a car in Austin, at least in this data set, in a given period of time?
No, that's not really tracked. Where they grow up.
Well, no, not where they grow up, but where they're from. I mean, someone from Kansas has probably gotten hit sometime. People from Kansas travel to Austin all the time.
No, I don't think that would be in the data set.
But would it, like, would their origin, would their home address be captured at all?
No.
Interesting. Because, you know, I'm trying to just kind of think about maybe the limitations of the model that you're thinking, because I'm also just interested in the people who are being hurt, because a lot of them will be commuting, they'll be going from one place to another, and if they're going through a particularly dangerous place, I'm just thinking about the relationship of the place of the accident to the place of the person's departure and arrival, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, being low in a low income area means you're more likely to be hit by a car. We notice. So, like,
yeah, it definitely has some influence. But I mean, I would argue it's almost, I mean, the obvious answer is,
yeah,
there's just more people who are more likely to walk in that area. America is very segregated.
Is there a way to remove from your regression, and maybe you've already done this, the accidents that happened on the freeway? The pedestrian incidents that happened on the freeway? Obviously, I think they matter, but I think it's a very different given scenario. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be possible. But I'd have to re-pull the data from the Texas website, and I don't want to do that. I didn't pull that field for my calculations, or for the map. Yeah, so no, I was playing with that, trying to predict, you know, where are these crashes happening. I want to try other stuff, mostly like satellite imagery. I think is probably going to be the most fruitful avenue to have like a strong model.
Yeah.
Because I can't get anything better than like 10% on from just the census stuff.
Yeah. No, but it really helps tell the story. Being able to see the imagery, understand what's going on at a given intersection.
Must be blocked with rocks. We will tear down all the stoplights in America and replace them with rocks. Rocks in the intersection. And then there will be no speeders. There will be no racing to catch a red light.
Mm-hmm.
There will only be rocks in the intersection, and you will have to navigate the rocks with all the other cars. Fuck you.
Some intersections will be entirely filled with rocks.
Intersections will be impassable.
Yeah.
Due to the rocks.
Due to the many, many boulders, stones, pebbles, etc.
And you'll say to yourself, man, I wish I had taken my scooter to work today.
Yep.
We are envisioning a future for the people.
It's true. It's true. It's incredible, I think, how related it is to our cultural, our feelings of cultural frustration. I mean, I guess I'm just speaking for myself here, but I'm frustrated with a world where, you know, those who have power, especially in like entertainment, media, and technology spaces, want us to continue to believe that building communities online and existing online and being able to get everything shipped to your house and to just kind of be reclusive and to avoid human contact in person, like I'm frustrated with that. And part of what makes that possible is the automobile. And calling for, you know, the end of the age of the automobile in our cities is not only about saving all of the lives that we see on these maps and preventing all of these accidents that we see on these maps, but it's also about just bringing us culturally closer to each other so that we can generate new ideas and find a way to deal with all the craziness. I see it all as very related.
No, I mean, it's a great way to prevent any kind of class consciousness is to divide us up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that forever, right, in the United States. But this new form of it where, like, even the divisions that we have, there's divisions even beyond the physical realm, you know? We're trapped into these sub-communities, echo chambers.
I've joined a new community. I'm Cajun now.
Cajun. Yeah, you work for Big Cajun, so you finally took the oath?
Yeah, I work for... I've been promoted to Chief Executive Gumbo Officer.
CEGO.
of Cajun International. I'm a proprietor of Cajun goods and services.
So do you have to move to New Orleans?
No. No. No, we do business all over the world.
But headquarters has to be in Louisiana.
Yes, yes. The headquarters is in the swamp.
Mm-hmm. Is your boss an alligator?
That's a good one. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. He is our chief executive officer.
What's his name?
Oh, his name is, maybe it's Ari Gator.
Ari Gator. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Oh, I got one. I got one. He could be Tyler the Creator.
That's pretty good.
I worked for it. It took way too long.
Tyler the Creator is going to be our first podcast guest.
Yeah. Next week, folks. Tune in.
Next week. What if we got Joe Rogan as our very first podcast guest?
It would definitely be good for business.
Be good. But I think it would set the wrong tone for our listenership.
Probably.
We'd have to start selling jerkies.
Well, yeah, jerkies and you know, AG1 and, I don't know, fucking turmeric pills.
We want the listener to tell us what... we want you to do consumer research for us and tell us what you want to buy.
Yeah.
I prefer to not sell like shirts or like, I don't know, contribute to, you know, more
fast fashion, bullshit. Global slavery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not even so much concerned about the global slavery as much as the microplastics in my testicles.
¿Por qué no los dos?
No, I mean, they're both terrible. Don't get me wrong. But it's like, oh my God. Just the thought of the microplastic sends a shiver up my testicles.
It's a physical revulsion. Yeah, it's a physical revulsion. I am physically revolted by forced labor.
Yeah, yeah, naturally, naturally. I don't know why I sound so much like an apologist at the moment.
it's the shawarma.
The government! It's the government!
So... I did want to breach the subject of the terrible, tragic fires that are ripping through Los Angeles this last week. I have a lot of family and friends in L.A. I spent quite a bit of time in L.A. as a kid.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That even in that part of Santa Monica, like almost.
Yeah. I mean, you could see especially some of the houses that burned in like Pacific Palisade, Malibu. Like that, those were really close to a lot of where I spent my time, you know, showing my privilege here for sure. But it's crazy. I used to have nightmares when I was a kid that LA was flooding and that it was filling up with water. And I was like there and like trying to get to higher ground. I had that nightmare a bunch when I was a kid. And so honestly, seeing the apocalyptic imagery from LA has been troubling for me. It's like hard for me to like go about my day. It's like, wow, aren't these our country people? Shouldn't we be like not, shouldn't we be pausing a little bit on capitalism? But it never takes a breath, dude. It doesn't matter. I saw the footage of like the Amazon worker delivering a package, and there's like, you know, rubble on fire like blowing past his head.
It reminds me of the guy in the Baskin Robbins. He's like dressed as an ice cream cone, and then the Snapchat caption is, "How am I an essential worker?"
Yeah, exactly. I bet there was someone in a ice cream costume out there catching on fire.
Yeah, I gotta go science bin in the fire.
Yeah, but in the context of our beat, I did want to bring up, I mean, what's going to happen in these neighborhoods that have been entirely leveled? Like, there are blocks and blocks and blocks of urban fabric that could be completely reimagined. And, you know, again, I know that people just lost their homes and, like, so much that was important to them. Luckily, there haven't been too many deaths, but, you know, I know people have just lost a whole bunch, so I'm not saying that anyone should run in there and start doing anything, but
I have an answer.
Okay.
I think that the regulatory environment that govern those areas will remain the same before and after, right? So mm-hmm. I think that the exact same thing will be built there, but it will be uninsurable. So, I mean, like, maybe it becomes a ghetto, right? Because no one can build to the code. Mm-hmm. But the code rarely changes. But, like,
well, and it's, I mean, code, it's going to be fascinating.
Changes, I say that the code changes all the time, right? But yeah, it's always like these little carve outs.
In small ways, yeah.
If it's still zoned, if it's still like all zoned for the same, like huge setbacks and, you know, FAR restriction, if it's still zoned mm-hmm. in the same way, it's just going to look the same when all is said and done.
Of course. I mean, it's just like, you know, you're playing City Skylines and you have a disaster that happens and all the buildings get abandoned. And
well, because it's like you walk in a city and you see, let's just say you walk like 4 miles in a straight line in a city, and you see the urban form change. It's always just the regulatory environment.
Over time, because it's something that cities evolve and build very slowly, really. It takes years and years and years. So the regulatory environment is the pace at which these things move.
So I live in Austin. So it's like there's only a few neighborhoods where the housing stock is old enough to have different eras of architecture in the same neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. That's more normal in East Coast cities.
Yeah.
And then as you get further into the newer parts of Austin, it's complete homogeny. Anything that's post-war is, like, completely homogenous.
Yep. Well, that's everywhere.
Anything north of 53rd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the main thing that we could do in most of our cities to ease the current problems we have, both with housing and with access to amenities within 15 minutes of one's doorstep, is allow people to open a little shop in their garage. Like, if we did this in cookie cutter suburban neighborhoods, the neighborhoods would strengthen. And the infrastructure isn't built out to support a large variety of businesses, but you could at least get your essentials. Someone could easily set up, you know, a grocery in a suburban house if they had enough freezers and refrigerators. I mean, it would be, you know, kind of corner store vibe, bodega vibe, right? What if that was on the corner of every street in suburban America, or, you know, whatever was the critical number to support X number of households, right?
Yeah.
How many households do you think a bodega supports? That's a good question.
That's a fucking great question. That is such an important question. Because it's like in Queens, you'll see a bodega next to a bodega, and they'll both be doing good enough business to stay in business.
Yup.
So how many people Because how many people do you need in your sphere of influence to run a bodega?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be like 100.
100 200? People? 200?
Hmm. I give my bodega guy a lot of fucking money.
If the average, totally. The equivalent of what I have is our 7-Eleven right now, unfortunately. But
I love snacks.
I love the 7-Eleven. I mean, if the average customer spends, say, $15 a day, $10 a day, and there are 100 customers. I don't know if that's enough daily revenue.
Yeah, what's commercial rent? What's like a cheap commercial rent? Let's bang this out.
I think this is our first like real business segment.
Yeah, so I give my bodega guy like $10 a day. I'd say that's a safe. It averages to that.
Yeah, that
sure,
makes
for
sense.
For sure.
And the average customer, the mean customer might be less. And the median is probably less too. Because I don't think anyone probably is spending like $50 per day every day, right?
I don't know. It would be, I think $10 is a good, you know, just for the BS business that we're doing right now. Are you looking at commercial rents in Queens or in Austin?
If you had 100 customers, your gross revenue would be $365,000. And so what's profit on that? Probably something like 20-30%.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, 20-30%. If you're clever,
I bet you could call it 25% after expenses and taxes.
Yeah. Bodegas are the kind of place where they'd make really low margins on certain things and then really high margins on other things.
Without rent, this margin probably needs to be a little higher.
Yeah.
How much is commercial rent, bro? Location.
Commercial rent in my neighborhood is really, really high for our city average because it was all built at the same time fairly recently. And so the only tenants that have been able to remain in business are banks, like national banks, and CVS, and these weird corporate kind of sanitized restaurants. The restaurants are okay. There is a nail salon, but trying to allow for a diversity of uses in a district is really hard to do when everything is built at once under rigorous zoning law. Because obviously, a new business that's just starting out trying to scrape capital together isn't going to be able to afford the same rents that CVS is able to afford. But when you build an entire neighborhood up from scratch, it's hard to create a niche for a smaller player. It's just one of those things. And don't come at me, come at Jane Jacobs on that one. I'm just regurgitating. All right, math us up, baby.
Bro, I'm lost. I don't know. $14 per square foot per year. Okay, let me do the math. I have to convert that into dollars a month. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, square footage and then time.
So let's just say we don't need a small, big, I don't know, 300?
Yeah.
500 little square feet?
Say 500. That would be a respectable, pretty big bodega in New York City. I've been in some tiny bodegas. I've been in bodegas that feel like they're like 100 square feet. 200, maybe. I'm thinking of like 158th and St. Nick's. There's a bodega that's just like a tiny corner of the building.
Bro, I don't even know. My calculations are off. I'm illiterate.
What are your insights? So let's say, just for the sake of doing the calculation, that we could find a 300 square feet space to run our bodega for $1,500 a month. I'm sure in some place in the world that is a going rate. So we'll multiply that by 12. That's only $18,000 a year. So if you're making $1,000 a day, 365 days a year, you'd still have
I think you'd be well. You'd be well within.
You'd still have $350,000 in order to make, you know, your margins and pay yourself. So if you made 20% margin on that, you'd make 70K. So you'd have enough to pay yourself, and that's it. And I'm not considering any other capital expenses or licensing costs or.
It's probably miserable. It's the margin. It's probably so slim. The slimmest of margins.
There's a reason why most cities can't sustain them, is because you need clearly way more than 100 people. Which is, you know, but it's really hard in cities where everybody drives everywhere.
Well, it's also, it's just a chicken or the egg thing, because it's also illegal. So it's like, oh, maybe they could, in some context, be supported.
Well, yeah, in a context where the rent, there was no rent because the homeowner, say in a residential area that was opening a bodega in their garage, they own the property outright, right? They're not burdened by having to pay rent in a commercial district. It's like part of the zoning. You're right, it's chicken and the egg, but it's part of the zoning problem. The other part of the problem that is related to zoning is that 7-Eleven exists right by me, yes, because there's a lot of housing right by it, but it's also because it's receiving secondary diversity boost of patronage from people who are going to the nearby Trader Joe's, because Trader Joe's is definitely the like magnet of the neighborhood for people who live outside of the neighborhood. And so people will hit Trader Joe's and then hit 7-Eleven for the Doritos that they can't get at Trader Joe's, or the Bud Ice that they can't get at Trader Joe's, the Steel Reserve, you know, all of these delicacies that you must go to the 7-Eleven to procure. This would all, I mean, the entire situation would be different. Bodegas would have a better chance if these 7-Eleven type businesses, CVS type businesses, didn't cling on to where grocery stores are. Because it even further centralizes and incentivizes the person to drive to the shopping district, which was zoned as such, to do all of their, you know, chores in one spot. I'm getting hot, but you smell what I'm stepping in?
Yeah, I think I feel it. You know, zoning is just a big-ass scam to sell cars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but people loved it. You have to admit, people loved it. People love living in the burbs. People love white flight. What, the whites love white flight.
Well, who doesn't love to fly?
You know, and they were like, man, in this black neighborhood, I wish this was a freeway. And then they did it. And now we live in their society.
Yep, pretty much.
And I can't fucking cross the fucking street without almost getting hit by a car.
Yep. It's pretty rough.
I wish this was a road, said the white man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. And I mean, suburbanification, is that how I would say that? Suburbanization.
Suburbanification is a Red Hot Chili Peppers album.
No, it's a George W. Bushism.
Suburbiformication.
They're suburbiforming. The suburbans, the suburbanites, they're going to suburbiform them. So you better watch out. Get in your car, folks. The evildoers, they are a evil doing. That is the best thing that George W. Bush ever said, I think. It's just so true.
he was a charming guy, kind of like the way people talk about Barack Obama. People, it's like, oh yeah, I liked him. I thought, oh yeah, George Bush, I liked him.
Yeah,
he was so likable.
Yeah, he was such a likable war criminal.
Can you imagine if we had Mitt Romney as the president?
No, not this timeline. We got Daddy Trump, baby.
Can you imagine being one of those Republicans who's like, man, fuck Donald Trump, I'm sticking with Mitt Romney?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people out there that feel that way.
I think that the media made that type of person up in an effort to convince people that they don't like Donald Trump, but I think I think
no, you're wrong. You're wrong. That doesn't give actual conservatism enough credit in the United States. I've known a lot of people. I know a lot of people that feel this way. And sure, were they influenced by the media? Yes. But it's because the Republican Party, I mean, really what people should be upset about is that the Republicans in the 80s moved us away from the gold standard and essentially removed our monetary system from any sense of reality. I'm not saying that Donald Trump is necessarily new, but, you know, conservatism has been dying for a long time, and now Trump is like the nail in the coffin for those people. And I think that their righteousness for their political position is real. You got nothing? Come on, man. I hit you with these things. You got to hit me back.
No, man. Are you talking about like George W. Bush?
I'm talking about people who voted for George W. Bush, voted for John McCain, and then did not vote for Donald Trump.
But like Donald Trump has more people voted for him than those two presidents, right?
Well, yeah, but there's also a lot more people now. I mean, yeah. The population has increased. Like,
well, that's true. I know that's true. That's true. But I was under the impression that his turnout was actually pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it was. But I also think that he captured in the way that he has been able. He captured people that previously were voting for the Democrats. I mean,
I should say Democratic turnout, I believe, was like really like maybe turnout overall was pretty low.
Yeah, it was low. Because they didn't care. I mean, we had an anointed candidate at the
crazy.
Last second.
That, can we talk? How? They just killed him? They just said, sorry, Joe.
Sorry, buddy. We really were going to give you a chance, but we changed our minds, buddy. I'm sorry. Sometimes, you know, that's just how the cookie crumbles. Oh, okay. I guess I'll just lay down then. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to McGovern, and when McGovern got really close to winning the nomination, the Democrats invented the superdelegate system in the 70s, and so a fringe candidate in the Democratic Party has been incapable of gaining the election, even if they have more than 50% of the delegates, because the superdelegates, who are anointed party insiders, have enough influence so that, you know, Bernie Sanders would have had a chance of winning the nomination. It probably would have been a hung nomination in 2016 had it worked in the same way that the Republican Party did. But the party structure meant that Hillary Clinton was anointed to be the candidate. Again, nothing, just total silence.
No. It's bad. It's all so bad.
Yeah, I'm on one today. I'm on one. I'm sorry.
No, we got jokes. I just I gotta pepper in some jokes and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
The Democrats, traffic. Roadway deaths. Whew, fuck. Yeah. I get tired just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's true. It's an exhausting life. It's an exhausting path we tread.
But no, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. There will be a turning point where we will be able to reform our cities. We'll be able to take the streets back.
And by turning point, you're referring to like an entire upheaval of our institutions, right?
No, I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetime, but
it will come.
I think it will be magnificent just to see, because you know, it could go limping on our empire for another 500 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could, just because we're witnessing it begin to die, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean we'll be there for the end of it.
Sure thing. Yeah. Yeah. History is slow. I mean, if you, you know, believe in the fourth turning philosophy on this, I can't remember the name of the author. I mostly know the play, which is called Heroes of the Fourth Turning by Will Arbery. I highly recommend that play if it's playing in your area. I think in Austin, no, I think Trace did a staged reading of it. I don't think it's playing in the future. But Fourth Turning, who is it? Fourth Turning was William Strauss is the name of the thinker. But he, you know, sort of frames the four turnings of historical cycles. And it appears that we are, you know, getting through the fourth stage, which the first is the high, the second is the awakening, then the unraveling, and then the crisis, which leads back into the high.
I feel so, I've been unraveling, not in crisis. So are you sure? Are you sure?
It does feel like we're in unraveling. Four. I think so his argument is that the most recent unraveling in the U.S. began in the 1980s and includes the long boom in the 90s and the culture war that we're currently in. The last crisis that he posits occurred, say that the U.S. began its crisis phase with the Wall Street crash of 1929, and then climaxed with the end of World War II. And then it began another high.
I'm ready to get high.
And then there was the awakening, which happened, you know, beginning with the civil rights movement and then through, you know, hippie culture. And then the unraveling began in the 80s when they took the money away from any sense of reality. I'll continue to repeat that. And, you know, went into ultra consumerism, you know, all of that. And yeah, I think we're right at the end of the unraveling is what the author would argue.
Are you not a Keynesian, Lucas?
I'm the Keynesian.
I'm just a little boy in London.
The government wants you to think that money has value. Only my penis pills have value.
But, sir, what is money for but to get us all to agree what something's worth, sir? Mr. Jones, help me understand.
I can't help you, kid.
Please?
You're weak.
Okay, sir.
Okay, for the record, Alex Jones, I don't believe has expressed any, like, you know, eugenicist views about people with disabilities, but that's the bit.
You're weak. Mm-hmm. You should die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he probably has, right? I mean, he's good catch-all villain.
He's said everything. If you're on TV long enough, you'll say everything, especially if you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Other opinions. I still have his Wikipedia page up. Let me command F, like, abilities. Nope. No, liabilities.
We could gain a following just by manufacturing some some, like, absurd beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We could come up with our own Sandy Hook conspiracy and try to get famous that way. But yikes. Not the Sandy Hook, but, like, you know, like a similar thing. Like, yeah.
Well,
what do you think? What do you think? Good idea, bad idea?
I don't think that it's altogether without merit, as long as, you know, the way that the conspiracy treated the event didn't hurt the people who were already hurt by it. Because that was really the thing with Alex Jones, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Those parents really did not deserve to have like, new media circus surrounding the loss of their babies. Like, they didn't deserve that, and he deserves to rot.
What if we what if we called in a second Pizzagate on the Sandy Hook families?
Jesus.
Hi, 911. I'd like to SWAT a Pizzagate to the Sandy Hook families.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd head right out there.
Please, right away, right away. Beat them up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure working with you.
Pleasure working with you.
No, in order to have that kind of access to the police, you need to be, you know, in some secret white supremacist circles.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You got to be a member of the tunnels.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's these tunnels under Austin that I have yet to go into. But
is there a group of people that live down there?
No, there's like sensors down there now, so it's not trivially easy to go trespass down there. Unless you know what you're doing, and I don't. So,
well, definitely don't go down there during a rainstorm or before one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I presume that they're built so that the city doesn't flood.
There's some tunnels in the city that are for flooding diversion. But then I think these are like steam tunnels.
Interesting.
Utility tunnels.
You got
Austin is largely master planned. Austin is largely a master planned place.
Especially over the last 30 years, 50 years.
No, I mean, even originally, I think there was a downtown plan in 1840.
Yeah. Yeah, Denver was master planned, for lack of a better.
I don't know where the oldest structure in Austin is. Let me
see. It's not older than the Round Rock, I tell you that much. You got steam heat. You got steam heat. Name that musical, Ben.
Oh, the French Legation.
The French Legation. That makes sense. They would have been there first as people who built permanent structures.
I'll have to go visit that. That's downtown.
How old is it?
1842.
That's pretty old.
1841.
Tishish.
Built to represent the French. That's sick. And the more you learn, man.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, goodness gracious. Now, do you have any other transportation-related news, entertainment content?
I want to circle back and say one more thing about L.A., in response to your position, which is that, you know, as long as the zoning laws don't change, it'll just be rebuilt in the same fashion. Areas will be rebuilt in the same fashion that they were destroyed. But, I mean, I would say that if there are any, you know, activists with resources who are hoping to find an opportunity to like challenge some ideas and try some new ways of doing city districts and city areas. I mean, those governments would be great ones to lobby. It just seems like an opportunity for activism and potentially a new start. You know, I'm trying to find hope in this situation, which seems extremely hopeless.
Aren't some of those neighborhoods like the richest people in America?
Some of them are, but a lot of low-income places have burned down, too. You just haven't heard as much about it.
Right, right. But it's like the ones that are high-income, I think, you know, they own that land. So they're going to – they never do anything right. The ones that are more working class probably have a higher potential to be redeveloped in perhaps a more environmentally friendly way.
Yeah. Provided, I mean, we'll see what happens. A lot of people, I'm sure, you know, if it's their only residence that they, if it's their only property that they own, and now it's gone, and insurance didn't cover because they got dropped several months ago, you know, a lot of people are going to be sort of SOL. A lot of people are going to be in a position where if an investment bank comes through and says, hey, we'll give you $100,000 for the lot. Aren't we great? Aren't we an angel for you? People will take it and be forced out. And then the developers will do what they want, just like they will in the rich communities. So I think this is what I'm saying is like, and maybe we need to have someone from LA on to tell us which, you know, areas this might be most possible in. But, you know, there must be somewhere where we can resist the endless pit of desire of the developers and the capitalists, right?
But isn't this like just another opportunity to sell houses? Like, isn't this just aren't they just going to develop it?
I'm saying that this would be a great place for an activist with some resources to focus their energy so that they can try to fight that. That's all I'm saying. I agree that that's probably going to happen, but I'm trying not to be a doomer.
Where burned down? Let's take a look. It's time to look at the map.
And I'll need to ski-daddle here pretty quick.
Really? There's so much podcast to... There's so much pod to cast.
I'd rather listen to my rodcast.
Yeah, man. That's quite a bit of neighborhood.
Which map are you looking at?
Right now, just the Palisades fire.
Are you on the fire.ca.gov?
So yeah, like the Altadena one is like the working class neighborhood, right?
I believe so.
Fire. It's fucking huge.
Yeah. No, it's shocking. Maybe if we had practiced more indigenous traditional land management practices, we'd be in better shape.
How much of this is on climate change and how much of this is on forestry practices?
That's a good question.
What I want to know.
Well, in climate change for sure.
Well, yeah, definitely some climate change, but also our relationship with the environment as it relates to urbanism and urban planning.
It does also speak to the lack of permanence with which these neighborhoods were literally built. You know, when Chicago had its great fire, when it rebuilt good sections of the neighborhood, those sections are never going to burn down again because of how they made them the second time around. But yeah, the fire is literally just reaching down from the hills. It's terrifying. And again, you know, I mean, I know this is still going on and it can be a little, I don't know. There's something that feels a little icky about discussing any, you know, future plans for what's going to happen, considering people are still mourning the loss of their homes. But I don't know. There's a lot of space lost here, and to me, maybe it offers an opportunity to reimagine how our cities look.
Yeah, I feel like most of those people are just going to want their house back.
Yep. It's true.
Who knows how long it'll be until it's actually inhabitable again?
Yeah. With all the like plastic burning and chemicals and...
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Come on, this is a jokes podcast. Transportation is such a sad subject.
Yeah.
Core contributor to climate change. Million deaths worldwide every year. Indiscriminate violence towards it's discriminate because we do hit more men and black people with cars than
it is
otherwise
discriminatory,
but
violence.
We still hit all types of people. We still hit men, women, and children with cars, so in some ways it's discriminate but it's also indiscriminate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's indiscriminately discriminate.
It's discriminatory.
Because they're gonna discriminate.
Cars, man. Sell your car. Send $1,000 to the Lime Scooter Company and get a lifetime contract like me. Scoot everywhere. Chain the scooters scoot together forever to extend the battery life. So you can ride two at a time.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah. Do you scoot? Does Denver have a...
Yeah, I scoot. I scoot a lot. I Lime. That's usually my brand of choice. There's also Lyft, and we very recently got some birds.
I love the scooters. The only issue is that sometimes my dick drags on the ground.
Because
it's extreme length.
Mm-hmm. And weight.
It's weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I scoot. I prefer to ride my bike usually, but you know, if I'm going like to the bar, I scoot. Usually take the bus back.
Have you ever scooted drunk?
Yeah. Not like sloshed.
Yeah, me too.
You know, after a few drinks. But I try not to, especially if it's dark.
It should be one of the main things that Roadway Report is going to lobby for at the state and national level is making sure there's a distinction between scooting drunk and driving drunk.
Yep.
Making sure there's a legal distinction.
Yeah. Yeah, there should be. 1,000,000%.
Yeah. Oh. Legalize drunk scooting.
Mm-hmm. Encourage it. Hell. If there weren't cars, it would just be fun.
It's true, though. It's like it would make sense to run a PSA that said legalize drunk scooting, because if it's legal to scoot drunk, then you have at least a fairly viable alternative to get to the bar.
Mm-hmm. And there'd be fewer people potentially slamming a giant vehicle into you drunkenly, because they're also drunk on their scooter next to you. Solidarity.
Just on his scooter.
Yeah,
on his scooter.
Yeah.
Look, man, fucking public policy making is a piece of cake. Everyone who's ever struggled at it is a bitch.
It's simple, especially in today's day and age.
And if you think it's easy, if you think it's hard, come on our podcast. We'll make fun of you.
Yeah. Come on.
That's a challenge to every public servant in America.
Yes. I'd say, hey, anybody, anywhere, come on, challenge us. Throw the gauntlet down. We're ready.
It doesn't matter who you are. You can literally just be a guy named Hot Dog who comes into my job. Mm-hmm. you can come on
so
the
next
pod.
Week's guest on the pod, Hot You're Dog all- Henry.
Please write to us if you want to be on the podcast, but especially if you either ride the bus or are a public servant or transportation professional. We'd love to hear from you.
Yep, absolutely. Write in. Ben, where can they reach you?
They can hit me at ben@roadway.report. That's my email.
Awesome. Yeah, if you want to get in touch with me, you could reach out to blurbanist@gmail.com. You can also find Blurbanist on Patreon and Instagram and Threads. Can also just comment. Can you comment on Spotify? I don't think you can.
Yeah, hey, if you listen to our stupid fucking podcast, please like and
tell us. We'd like to know.
Give us a little review on iTunes and Spotify.
Just a little review.
Let the algorithm know that we, you know. Let the algorithm proliferate our mentally challenged content.
Oh, yes. I feel like that should be our sign off.
Don't get hit by a fucking car. Whatever you do, I don't care if you wear a fucking bike helmet. I don't care if you have lights on your bike. I don't care if you're. I don't care who you are. Just don't get hit. And everything's going to be okay.
Be more like the guy who got all in his high-vis and his reflecto vest that says armed cyclist with the image of the gun. Be more like that guy.
Trust no one is probably. Don't get hit by a car. Trust no one.
Trust no one.
That's my sign off.
And to let the algorithm proliferate your content.
The Gooner Army. The Gooner Army will rise up. We will rise up, but we will not come.
All right. Stay safe out there. Be well. I'm signing off here. Stay safe out there.
Love you, bro. It's good talking. See you in a week.
Love you, man. Ta-ta for now.